Hello and welcome to episode 42 of Exploring Environmental History. I'm Jan Oosthoek. From the 27th of June to the 2nd of July 2011, the 6th meeting of the European Society for Environmental History was held in the city of Turku in Finland. The theme of the conference was Encounters of Sea and Land. Highlights of the conference included keynote presentations by Sverker Sörlin of the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm on nature, technology and art in the Nordic landscape, Helen Ross-Wadowski of the University of Connecticut at Avery Point on the confluence of scientific and popular interests in the ocean during the Cold War, and Stephen Mosley of Leeds Metropolitan University on coastal cities and environmental change. The many parallel sessions contain stimulating and exciting papers on many topics, including the rewilding of Europe, East-West environmental politics in Europe during the Cold War, forest history, the history of peat as energy source around the North Sea Basin, and a panel on the emergence of the idea of global environmental change, to mention only a few. It is almost impossible to get a real sense of the rich nature of this conference in the confines of a single or even a couple of podcast episodes, and for this reason I restrict myself to one interesting presentation given at a meeting that reported on a novel experiment in environmental history didactics involving the web and social networking technologies, and a panel entitled Towards an Online Environmental History of Europe. Both had in common that they discussed the use of digital technologies to encourage collaboration and dissemination of scholarly work within the environmental history community, among students, and beyond. Let's first turn to the didactics of environmental history. Environmental history is a very place-based topic of study, and to teach it well, it ideally includes field work in or near the locality of where the students are based. This proves often difficult enough, but now imagine teaching environmental history to two classes on two different continents. With the use of web technology, this is now possible, and this was the topic of a paper entitled Bridging Continents in Teaching Environmental History, Rio de Janeiro and Vienna. After the presentation, I caught up with the authors of this paper for an interview. They first introduced themselves.
I'm Martin Schmidt. I'm from the Institute of Social Ecology, Center for Environmental History in Vienna, in Austria. Currently at the Rachel Carson Center in Munich, Germany. And I'm an environmental historian, I would say, put it just simply.
Okay, my name is Rogério Oliveira. I'm from Pontifical University Catholic of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and I work with environmental history and also with historical ecology of the Atlantic rainforest in Brazil.
And you carried this project out, which is in fact an environmental history didactical experimental project, and it's an intercontinental course in environmental history. Intercontinental course in environmental history, how does that work? Yeah, I read Rio de Janeiro and Vienna. That's quite a long way apart. So how did this work?
Yeah. In a first glance, it doesn't make too much sense to compare Europe and South America and Vienna and Rio de Janeiro. But the idea was to go beyond this, the challenge of using environmental history to see connections, past connections, and the directions for the future using the history of these both cities and related to the history of landscape transformation. This was the main idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you asked how that's the work. Obviously, there are about 6,000 kilometers between these two places, but only 6 hours of time difference. So there are ways nowadays how you can cooperate via the internet, via common workspace on the internet, via also direct communication with chats, so to say. But maybe I would add, we came up with that idea because Rogério and me, we met about 2 years, 2.5 years ago. And then I visited Brazil for a SOLCHA conference, a conference of the South American, Latin American Society for Environmental History. And I stayed with Rogério and had the pleasure to stay with his family and travel around in Brazil. And at the end of my stay there, we thought about ways how we can keep in contact and how can we exchange. And as we, I think we, both of us, we are very interested in teaching, and we are one of the scholars at our universities who love to teach. We thought, okay, maybe teaching is a way. And we came up with the idea of a common course on urban environmental history. And the idea was rather simple, I would say. The idea was to ask students in small groups of about 3-4 with very different backgrounds. My students, for example, come from ecology, history. Rogério is mainly from geography or forestry. To ask these small groups of students to explain to students at the other side of the Great Pond, so to say, of the other side of the Great Atlantic, what is a history, what is a forest, what is a river, what is a specific neighborhood in my city when I try to tell you a story about its history, which is a common history of society and nature. So tell them the environmental history, or at least some aspects of the environmental history of a specific place in your own city, and explain them what is a forest, a river, a settlement in my city. This was the main idea.
So how did you go about this with students? I understand they were divided in groups and they got assignments. Is it correct that they got each a counter group in each part of, you know, one in Brazil and one in Vienna doing the same topic, but then on each other's city? Is that right?
The groups were divided in these three areas, two different areas, and they went to the field with more or less the same protocol. They had some answers to respond, and also the main worry was to tell how to tell to people with a very different background from another continent and another culture to tell about the history and try to find how was the history between society and nature in every studied area.
Maybe to explain that a little bit more, the idea was, okay, in each city there is one group of 3-4 students dealing with the environmental history of a specific place and explaining to the other group on the other side of the Atlantic, what is that, a forest? When I look at its history and its current shape as a result of the common history of society and nature, there was what we called a mirror group on the other side. Yeah? So at the mid of the semester, after about 3-4 months, the students had to present their preliminary results, so to say. So in a very early stage, of course, there was not really substantial research to be done, but they had to give a first impression to their colleagues. And the idea of a mirror group was that the mirror group then responds to that. What is interesting for them about the story of this place 6,000 kilometers away? What is surprising for them? Where do they see main differences, or also maybe surprising similarities between these two very different places? So to bring them into to mediate a dialogue between these two student groups with very different backgrounds and the very different places with which they have to deal.
So how did they respond to this project? Because it's of course they are not physically there, that are separated, so using this technology in order to communicate with one another and exchange ideas. How did they respond to that?
First of all, there was a huge difference, a cultural difference, and also backgrounds. We had psychologists, so we had a major, we had geographers, and even historians. the group was very diverse. But I felt that each group was very proud to show their work to the mirror group, as we call it them. And another thing that was very interesting was that each group had a direct contact. And so the seminaries, they contaminated each other with their ideas. And so, but we had a basic background that was the history of landscape changing and social metabolism, and also the territory, how this basic concepts worked in the landscape transformation. That was the main idea. But the seminaries were very, very good.
You asked how they responded. The Viennese students, of course, they proposed after 2 weeks to make an excursion to Rio de Janeiro, the Copacabana and the Ipanema and things like that. Yeah. I said, okay, we will try that maybe the next time. But more seriously, what was also interesting for me, Rogerio and me, we were very careful in preparing that course, and it took us about a discussion of about a year, I think,
yes.
Yeah,
we
to prepare that. Yes,
yes, to discuss.
To prepare that, and we were very careful and a little bit, we worried a little bit more than our students in how efficient and how secure the technical stuff will work mm-hmm. in that exchange. And we were afraid, for example, that if we rely too much on chats, for example, on direct communication, and this will break down, then we will have a major problem in the course. So we came up with a concept, with a schedule, with a plan for that course, which made us not too dependent mm-hmm. from technical infrastructure. And for example, one of the concrete decisions was that we count more on diachronous communication, so to say. So some of the classes, the introductory lectures on the environmental history of Rio de Janeiro and Vienna, they were videotaped and uploaded to a common platform, and they were shown to the students on the other side of the Atlantic the next week, in the next class. And then there was a discussion which was also documented and uploaded and things like that. And there were three or four specific points during the course where we said, okay, there should be some direct communication at the beginning, in the middle, and of course in the end.
And this platform was very important. It worked as a social memory of the group, and I think it's still on air. Mm-hmm. And so people could add bibliography, photos, comments, and so on, and all the classes were downloaded in this platform. This was a very good thing that worked very well. With this platform, we had all the things of the course concentrated. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we had it dispersed. So it was very good, the idea of using Moodle.
That also meant everything was documented. Students could go back to it, which is didactically a very, very good thing to do. But the other thing that struck me was that it also seemed a combination of a physical field trip, because the students made field trips, that's my understanding, and then translated into a more kind of virtual thing to communicate it to the students to the other side of the ocean. And that's a very interesting concept, I think. So how did that the field trips translate into something that could be communicated through the web?
I think for every course in environmental history, it's quite a good idea, if possible, to go to the place. Environmental history is first and foremost, and with good reasons in many cases, place-based research and place-based experience. Yes. And this had also reasons for, with respect to sources which were reachable for our students. For example, I learned from Rogerio that if you want to go back far more in time than, let's say, the 19th century in a city like Rio de Janeiro, it's getting quite hard to get written sources, for example, or maps or plans. So the landscape itself is a very important source for environmental historians in Latin America. And of course, also in Europe, the landscape itself is maybe the most important source we have as an environmental historian. And we tried to help our students or assist our students in learning to read a landscape for the traces of past states of these socio-ecological systems as we approached it from a theoretical point of view. And how did that translate? They had a very clear task. The students, they had to prepare a presentation. They could choose the format of the presentation, but most of them did PowerPoint presentations, I think, and they presented that. This was also videotaped and shown to a week later to the colleagues in Brazil or in Austria. And, for example, they many of these student groups worked with material they have produced by themselves on the trips, for example. It was important for them to not only to collect materials which was produced by other people, but also have their own photos and sometimes also connect to make themselves understandable, connect these places to their own biographies. Yeah? Mm-hmm. This was also one of the, so to say, strategies in communicating or explaining places which are so different in many respects by saying, oh, it has something to do with my biography. Huh? I was there as a child, or I was brought there by my grandfather to this forest, and what have we done there? Things like that. This is somehow also more touching, or it's understandable in such a direct way also for people with a totally different background.
It's bringing the landscape to life, essentially. Yes.
Well, we are preparing a paper with the syllables and with the main concepts that we used as social metabolism, landscape, and territory, with a list of pros and cons about the course. And the idea is that this kind of course is very easy to be done in every place. It's very, very easy by a minimum cost. So I think that it's a very positive way of teaching environmental history.
And I'm looking forward actually to read the paper when it's ready. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Another panel, in fact a round table, was devoted to the technical, structural and thematic issues of an online environmental history of Europe, which is currently developed by the Rachel Carson Center for Environment and Society in Munich. Kimberly Coulter, the director of this project, gave an overview of what this Arcadia portal aims to do and the challenges involved. Arcadia is an interpretive and encyclopedia-like project under the umbrella of the Environment and Society portal. Arcadia will be an online resource that will contain short articles, images, maps, and even primary material related to European environmental history. The project is a collaboration of the Rachel Carson Center and the European Society for Environmental History. The site will provide visitors with an exploratory experience through the provision of exploratory tools such as maps, an interactive timeline, and connections based on keywords, clouds, location, etc. The first stage of the project is concerned with the creation of a corpus of content to populate the site. This will not be done through crowdsourcing like Wikipedia, where anyone can contribute articles and the wisdom of the crowd results, in an ideal world, in reliable articles. But instead, it will be clump-sourced. This means that contributions will come from experts in the field, initially from members of the European Society for Environmental History, and an editor will review these in order to assure quality control. It is the plan to eventually expand Arcadia to cover all world regions and to include other academic associations. The articles will be in the form of localized histories that are editable, and each entry will include time, theme and location metadata in order to make it possible to visualize it on a map and make it searchable. The success of the site depends on the amount of material, the size of the corpus, which is important to ensure plenty and meaningful connections between documents. The power of the modern web are its creative technologies that makes it possible to combine and recombine material in new and unexpected ways. Collaboration and social networking, as well as resource discovery, are key ingredients for successful sites like Wikipedia and Encyclopedia of Earth. The Arcadia site will provide a similar but more dynamic experience during the second phase of the project, when tools that allow visitors to make their own connections between documents, discover new relevant resources, recombine them, and visualize these on a map or timeline will be implemented. Arcadia Online Environmental History will be launched in early 2012 as part of the umbrella Environment and Society portal. Anyone interested in contributing articles, ideas and suggestions is encouraged to contact the project team. More information can be found on the web at www.environmentandsociety.org/arcadia.html. Exploring Environmental History will report on the launch of Arcadia early next year, when people who are involved in the project will be my guests on the podcast. To get a feel for the richness of the European Society for Environmental History conference held in Finland, you can read the program and abstracts online on the conference website at eseh2011.utu.fi. The next meeting of the European Society for Environmental History will take place in Munich in the summer of 2013. Follow all news and announcements related to this event and other developments on the news page of Environmental History Resources or the Twitter feed at @eh_resources. The next edition of the podcast features an interview with David Moon of Durham University, reflecting on his recent research trip to the steppes of Ukraine as part of his research of the environmental history of the Russian and Ukrainian steppes. I hope that you will join me for this journey into the eastern fringes of Europe. This is Jan Oosthoek from Newcastle upon Tyne.